Constance Vale stood at the edge of the excavation, her boots sinking slightly into the soft sand. The sun beat down on her wide-brimmed hat, and she adjusted the strap of her leather satchel. Before her, a half-excavated staircase led down into darkness. Dr. Fariba Shirazi emerged from the trench, brushing dust from her sleeves. Her face was weathered and her eyes sharp as flint.
"You're early, Miss Vale. I appreciate punctuality. The ministry in Cairo sent word you were coming, but they were light on specifics."
Constance stepped closer, peering down the steps.
"I was told you'd found something unusual. Something that might match a family heirloom I've been tracing."
Fariba nodded slowly, pulling a folded paper from her pocket. She handed it over.
"This seal was stamped on a clay jar we uncovered 3 days ago. I've never seen its like. The cartouche is not in any known pharaonic registry."
Constance studied the drawing. A serpent coiled around a sun disk, its tail forming a spiral.
"This symbol appears on a locket my grandfather brought back from his travels in 1898. He always said it marked the entrance to the tomb of the serpent priest."
Fariba's eyebrows lifted.
"The serpent priest. That's a legend even among the old storytellers. They say he was a healer who defied the pharaoh and was buried alive with his secrets."
Constance looked down the staircase.
"Then let's see if the legends have teeth."
A young British assistant scrambled up from below. His face was flushed with excitement.
"Dr. Shirazi, Miss Vale, you need to see this. The lower chamber. There's an inscription we didn't notice before. It's fresh. The sand had hidden it."
Fariba exchanged a glance with Constance.
"Fresh? That's impossible. This tomb hasn't been opened in 3,000 years.
Oliver shook his head.
"I know, but the mortar around the stone is still damp. Someone's been here. Recently."
Constance felt the ground tremble faintly beneath her feet.
"Then we'd better move quickly, before whoever it is comes back."
The staircase descended 20 uneven steps before opening into a rectangular chamber. Lanterns flickered on tripods, casting long shadows across walls covered in faded hieroglyphs. The air was thick and still. Oliver led them to the far wall, where a slab of limestone had been pulled aside, revealing a narrow passage beyond.
"We only pushed it open an hour ago. The mortar was soft, practically clay. Someone applied it within the last few days."
Constance knelt, touching the edge of the stone. Her fingers came away grey and damp.
"They sealed it from the inside."
Fariba's face tightened.
"That means someone is already in the deeper chambers. Or was. We may have a rival team working from a different entrance."
Constance stood, drawing a small torch from her belt.
"One way to find out. Oliver, stay here and keep watch. If we're not back in 2 hours, send word to the ministry."
Oliver nodded, swallowing hard.
"Yes, Miss Vale, be careful."
Constance stepped into the passage, Fariba close behind. The walls narrowed until they had to turn sideways to squeeze through. The torchlight revealed a chamber beyond, circular and domed. In the center stood a stone pedestal.
Upon it rested a bronze chest, its surface rippled with green patina. And carved into the floor around the pedestal was the same serpent and sun symbol from the cartouche. Fariba whispered.
"This is the inner sanctum. The legend said the serpent priest's knowledge was not written on papyrus, but etched into the bones of the earth.
Constance stepped forward, but Fariba grabbed her arm.
Wait, look at the floor.
Constance lowered the torch. Between the pedestal and the entrance, the stone tiles were arranged in a pattern, some slightly raised, others deep with shadow. A pressure plate trap.
Someone's been clever. They didn't disarm it. They just knew the safe path.
She studied the pattern. The raised tiles formed a spiral, mirroring the serpent's coil.
We follow the curve. Step where the serpent's body would lie.
She placed her boot carefully on the first raised tile. It held firm.
You gambling? I'm reading the room.
She took another step, then another. Fariba followed, matching her movements exactly. The spiral led them around the pedestal, and as Constance stepped onto the final tile, the bronze chest emitted a soft click.
The lock just disengaged. Whoever was here before didn't get this far.
Fariba's eyes were wide.
Then the chamber was already open when they arrived, but they couldn't solve the floor.
Constance lifted the lid of the chest. Inside lay a single object, a golden serpent, coiled, its eyes set with small emeralds. Beneath it, a roll of papyrus.
This is the key. The question is, to what?
Constance and Fariba emerged from the tomb into the late afternoon sun. The sky had turned a bruised orange and a hot wind was picking up, whipping sand across the camp. Oliver met them at the top of the steps, his face pale.
Miss Vale, we have a problem. A man arrived about 20 minutes ago. American. He claims he has a permit from the Cairo Museum to excavate the same site.
Fariba's expression darkened.
That's impossible. I hold the exclusive license for this dig.
A heavy voice cut across the wind.
License can be revoked, Shirazi, especially when the ministry learns you've been holding back fines.
A broad-shouldered man in a linen suit and wide-brimmed hat stepped out from behind a tent. His face was tanned and lined, and he wore a revolver at his hip. Constance squared her shoulders.
And you are?
Name's Quincy Abbott. I represent a private collector. He's got friends in very high places. That golden serpent you just pulled out, it belongs to him now.
Constance slipped the coiled serpent from her satchel, holding it up. The emerald eyes caught the dying light.
This belongs to the Egyptian Antiquity Service, and it's staying with Dr. Shirazi until properly documented.
Quincy chuckled, shaking his head.
You've got pluck, miss, but pluck don't stop bullets.
He rested his hand on the revolver butt. Fariba stepped between them.
You would shoot a woman over a piece of bronze? In front of witnesses?
Quincy's grin faded.
I'd shoot a woman over a lot less if it meant keeping my contract. But I'm a reasonable man. You hand over the serpent and the papyrus, and I'll let you walk back to Cairo with your reputations intact.
Constance looked at Fariba, then at Oliver. The wind howled, and the first grains of the sandstorm began to sting their faces.
I need a moment to consider your generous offer.
She turned, walking a few paces away. The serpent's head felt warm against her palm. The papyrus crackled in her pocket.
Oliver, is there another way into the tomb from the campsite?
Oliver whispered, his voice low.
Yes, there's a fissure at the rear of the wadi. It leads into a side chamber we haven't fully mapped, but it's tight. You'd have to crawl.
Constance nodded, her mind racing.
Good.
When I give the signal, you and Dr. Shirazi make for the lorry. I'll lead Abbott into the tomb and lose him in the dark.
Fariba grabbed her arm.
That's madness. He'll follow you. Let him. I grew up exploring caves in Kentucky. I know how to disappear underground.
She turned back to Quincy, her expression calm.
All right, Mr. Abbott. I'll take you to the Serpent's Chamber. But I keep the papyrus. That's my price.
Quincy studied her for a long moment, then nodded slowly.
Fair enough. Lead away.
Constance descended the steps again, the golden serpent still in her hand. Behind her, Quincy's boots echoed on the stone. The trap was set. The torchlight flickered as Constance moved swiftly through the lower passage, her footsteps sure and deliberate. Behind her, Quincy's breathing was labored, his bulk slowing him.
Slow down, damn it! I can't see a thing!
Constance rounded a corner and pressed herself into a recess in the wall. The torch she'd been carrying she wedged into a crack, its light pointing down a false passage.
The chamber's just ahead. Watch your step. There's a drop.
She heard him mutter something, then the sound of his boots scraping as he moved forward. She slipped away, ducking into a low crawl space she'd spotted on her first descent. The tunnel narrowed, and she had to wriggle on her belly, the golden serpent clutched in one hand. Behind her, Quincy's voice echoed.
Vale? Where are you?
He fired a warning shot into the dark. The sound rang in her ears, but she kept moving. The tunnel opened into a small chamber she recognized from the papyrus. The map had shown a secondary ventilation shaft leading to the surface. She stood, brushing herself off. Above her, a narrow chimney rose into darkness. Faint light filtered down from a crack far above.
That's my way out.
She tucked the serpent safely into her satchel and began to climb, wedging her boots against the narrow walls, inching upward. Below,
stop her.
She heard
stop
Quincy's
her.
Voice again.
Stop her.
Closer now.
Stop her.
You can't run forever, Vale.
She kept climbing. Her arms burned. The crack grew wider, and she could see stars through the gap. With a final heave, she pulled herself out onto the desert surface, the wind whipping around her. She was at the base of a low ridge, about half a mile from the camp. The Zori was already moving, headlights cutting through the swirling sand.
They made it.
She began walking toward the lights, the golden serpent warm against her side. Behind her, the tomb entrance was lost in the storm. The lorry rattled through the darkness, its headlights carving a narrow path through the sandstorm. Constance sat in the back, wrapped in a blanket, the golden serpent and papyrus spread before her. Fariba sat opposite, a lantern hanging from the canvas frame. Fariba examined the papyrus under the light.
This isn't a map of the tomb we found. It's a map of a different site entirely. Somewhere in the western desert, near the depression of Siva.
Constance leaned forward, tracing the faded ink with her finger.
Siwa? That's Alexander's oracle. What would a serpent priest be doing near Siwa?
Fariba's eyes were troubled.
The legends say the priest was not Egyptian. He came from the west, from the land of the sand seas. He brought knowledge of medicine, astronomy, and something else. Something the pharaohs feared.
Oliver called from the front of the lorry.
We should reach the railhead at Karga by dawn. From there, we can take the train to Cairo.
Constance shook her head.
No, we go straight to Siwa. Abbott will expect us to run to Cairo. He'll have people waiting at the station.
Fariba considered this, then nodded.
She's right. The desert is dangerous, but it's our only advantage. We'll need supplies. Water, fuel, food for at least a week.
Oliver groaned.
The track to Siwa is barely a camel trail. We'll be rattling our teeth out.
Constance smiled faintly.
Then we'd better get used to the sound.
The storm began to ease as midnight passed. The stars emerged, cold and bright. Constance studied the golden serpent, turning it over in her hands.
There's a seam here, along the belly. I think it opens.
Fariba took the serpent, examining it with a magnifying lens.
You're right. There's a latch, but it's delicate. Any pressure in the wrong place could break it.
Constance traced the pattern on the papyrus.
The map shows three markers. This serpent was the first. There are two more artifacts to find. When all three are brought together, the tomb of the serpent priest reveals itself.
Fariba set the serpent down carefully.
And what do you think you will find there, Miss Wade?
Constance looked out at the dark desert, the stars reflected in her eyes.
The truth about my grandfather, and maybe something the world has forgotten.
2 days later, the lorry limped into the oasis of Siwa. Palm trees rose against the blue sky, and the sound of water running through irrigation channels was almost musical after the endless sand. They had stopped at a small cluster of mud brick houses on the edge of the settlement. An elderly woman emerged, her face weathered by a lifetime of sun and wind. She wore a dark robe and a silver necklace laden with charms.
You are the ones who come from the tomb.
It was not a question. Constance stepped forward, the golden serpent in her hand.
We found this. The map on the papyrus leads here, to Siwa. We need help finding the second marker.
Bela studied the serpent, her lined fingers tracing its coils. She nodded slowly.
The serpent priest was known to my grandmother's grandmother. He came from the Sand Sea, as you said, but he did not die in the Nile Valley. He returned here, to the place of his birth.
They settled around a low fire. Bela threw dried herbs onto the flames, and a sharp, sweet smell rose.
The second marker is a scarab made of lapis lazuli. It rests in a tomb beneath the Temple of the Oracle, not far from here. But the temple is guarded by the descendants of the priest's own followers. They do not welcome strangers.
Fariba leaned forward.
Do you know how we might gain their trust?
Bela smiled, a glint in her dark eyes.
You already carry the first marker. Show them the serpent and speak the priest's name. But you must know it first.
Constance frowned.
His name? The papyrus doesn't mention any name.
Bela stood, retrieving a small clay pot from her home. She removed the lid and poured a handful of dark seeds into Constance's palm.
The name is whispered on the wind, but only those who listen can hear it. Chew these seeds tonight. Dream. The priest will speak to you, or he will not.
Constance looked at the seeds, then at Bela.
You're asking me to take a hallucinogen in a foreign country in the middle of a desert with armed men chasing us?
Bela shrugged.
أنا أسألكم لتصغوا. إذا اخترتوا أن تسمعوا فهذا أمر يخصكم.
Fariba touched Constance's arm.
I will stay with you. If anything goes wrong, I'll be here.
Constance took a breath, then nodded.
All right. Tonight, I'll listen.
The seeds were bitter, and Constance chewed them slowly, washing them down with water from a gourd. The fire had been reduced to embers, casting a dim orange glow across the circle. At first, nothing happened. She lay back on a blanket, staring at the stars. Then, slowly, the stars began to swirl, the constellations spinning into shapes she had never seen. A man's voice, ancient and dry as dust, spoke from the darkness.
Who are you?
The voice did not answer directly. Instead, images began to form in her mind's eye. A young man, dark-skinned and slender, walking through a sandstorm. He carried a staff with a serpent coiled around it. He came to a cave. Inside, walls were covered in symbols that glowed faintly. He pressed his hand to one, and the stone parted. A woman's voice, sweet and distant, called a name.
Senmut.
Constance repeated it.
Senmut.
The image shifted. She saw the young man, Senmut, kneeling before a figure in a pharaoh's crown. The pharaoh was angry. Guards seized Senmut and dragged him away. Then she was falling through darkness, through water, through sand. She landed with a jolt. She was back by the embers, the stars steady overhead. Fariba was beside her, holding a cup of water.
You were out for nearly 2 hours. Your pulse was racing, but you seemed calm.
Constance took the water, her hand trembling slightly.
I know his name. It's Senmut.
Fariba's eyes widened.
Senmut. That name appears in a few texts from the 18th dynasty. He was a physician and astronomer, one of the most learned men of his age. But he was erased from the records, condemned as a traitor.
Constance stood, steadying herself.
The pharaoh feared what he knew. He buried him alive, but Senmut's followers preserved his knowledge. The serpent, the scarab, and a third artifact, all pieces of a puzzle that leads to his true tomb.
Fariba's voice was hushed.
And what do you think is in that tomb?
Constance looked toward the distant silhouette of the Temple of the Oracle.
The key to a science the pharaohs tried to destroy, and maybe my grandfather's final secret.
The Temple of the Oracle stood on a rocky outcrop overlooking the oasis. Its columns were worn by centuries of wind, but the carvings were still sharp. Scenes of offerings, processions, and strange astronomical symbols.
A young man in a white robe stepped from the shadow of the entrance. His face was serious, and he carried a bronze-tipped staff.
You stand before the House of the Ancient Voices. State your purpose.
Constance held up the golden serpent. The morning sun caught its emerald eyes.
I come in the name of Senmut, the serpent priest. I seek the lapis scarab that was his companion.
The young man's expression flickered. He studied the serpent's, then Constance's face.
That symbol has not been shown in daylight for 3 generations. How did you come by it?
I found it in a tomb near Luxor. I have faced armed men and sandstorms to bring it here. I wish only to complete Senmut's work, to honor his memory.
Zachary was silent for a long moment. Then he stepped aside.
Enter. But know this, the path within is treacherous. The scarab is not given.
It is earned. They stepped into the dim interior. The air was cool, heavy with incense. A single shaft of light fell from a hole in the ceiling, illuminating a stone altar. On the altar lay a small lapis lazuli scarab, gleaming blue.
It's beautiful.
As they approached, the floor trembled. There was a grinding sound, and a section of the floor slid away, revealing a staircase descending into darkness. Zachary gestured.
100 meters ahead.
The scarab rests in the chamber below, but the chamber is sealed by riddle. Only those who understand Senmut's wisdom may pass.
Constance stepped to the edge of the staircase, peering down.
What riddle?
I am born in the dark, yet I feed on the light. I move without legs. I speak without a mouth. I guard the knowledge of the silent ones. What am I?
Constance thought. The phrase echoed in her mind. Born in the dark, feeds on light, Fariba whispered.
A shadow? A moon?
Constance shook her head slowly.
No, it's a reflection. A reflection is born in darkness, the space behind a mirror, but it only appears when light hits it. It moves without legs, it mouths words without sound, and it guards knowledge by showing us our own faces, the truth we hide from ourselves.
She looked at Zachary.
The answer is reflection.
At the bottom of the stairs, a light flickered to life. A doorway had opened. Zachary inclined his head.
You have passed the first trial. The scarab awaits.
The chamber below was small, no more than 15 feet across. In the center, a pedestal of black stone rose waist high, and upon it rested the lapis lazuli scarab. It was the size of a man's palm, intricately carved, and it seemed to glow with an inner light. Constance approached slowly, but Zachary held up a hand.
The second trial awaits. The scarab is protected by a pressure plate. The floor around it is divided into tiles. Step on the wrong tile, and the roof will collapse.
He gestured to the ceiling. Constance looked up and saw a network of cracks, as if the entire chamber had been designed to fall.
How many tiles are safe?
Only one path. It follows the pattern of the stars as they appeared on the night of Senmut's birth. You must find the constellation of the serpent.
Constance studied the floor. The tiles were plain stone, but faint lines had been etched into them, connecting points like a star chart.
I need a moment.
She closed her eyes, recalling the vision from the seeds. Senmut had held up his staff, and the stars had formed a pattern around him, a spiral of seven points, like the serpent's tail.
The constellation has seven stars. They form a spiral, not a straight line.
She opened her eyes and began to step, moving from tile to tile in a curved path. First, the tile near the entrance, then two to the left, one forward, one to the right, one back, and finally a diagonal step. She reached the pedestal. The chamber was silent. The scarab came away easily. As she lifted it, the cracks in the ceiling began to knit together, the stones shifting back into place.
You have been shown the way. The third marker lies in the sand sea, beneath the dunes that never rest. The map on the papyrus will guide you.
Constance held the scarab in her palm. Its blue surface was cool and smooth.
Thank you. We owe you a great debt.
Zachary shook his head.
You owe nothing. The knowledge of Senmut was never meant to be hidden. It was meant to be shared. Go. But beware. Others have been asking questions. A man with a southern accent and armed companions.
Constance's expression hardened.
Abbott, he's found us.
She turned to Fariba.
We need to move. Now. There's a shortcut through the temple's rear passage. Baylor mentioned it.
The rear passage was narrow and choked with sand. Constance pushed through, the scarab secured in her satchel alongside the serpent. Fariba followed, her robes catching on jagged stones. They emerged behind the temple into a narrow wadi that led toward the open desert.
But as they rounded a bend, Quincy Abbott stepped out from behind a boulder, a revolver in his hand.
Thought you could slip away, didn't you?
Constance stopped, her hands slightly raised.
Abbott! You're persistent, I'll give you that.
Persistence pays. Now, hand over the artifacts, both of them, and the papyrus.
Fariba stepped forward.
You'll never make it out of the desert alive if you shoot us. We have the only reliable map to Siva's water sources.
Quincy's grin was cold.
I've got my own guide, thanks. Now, I won't ask again.
Constance reached slowly into her satchel. Her fingers brushed the serpent, then the scarab. She could feel the weight of the papyrus beneath them.
You want them? Take them.
She tossed the serpent and scarab onto the sand between them. Quincy's eyes flickered down for a fraction of a second. That was enough.
Constance lunged forward, driving her shoulder into his chest. The revolver went off as he fell. The bullet sparked off a rock, inches from Fariba's head. Constance grappled for the revolver, her fingers closing around the cylinder as Quincy tried to twist free. You little... She slammed his wrist against a rock. The revolver clattered free.
He shoved her back, and she stumbled. But Fariba was already there, scooping up the revolver and aiming it squarely at Quincy.
Stay down!
Quincy froze, breathing hard.
You won't shoot.
Fariba's voice was steady.
Would you like to test that theory?
Constance retrieved the serpent and scarab from the sand, brushing them off.
Your guide won't find water if this storm buries the tracks. You should turn back while you can.
She turned and walked away, Fariba covering their retreat. The storm built behind them, swallowing the desert in a wall of sand.
The storm had forced them to shelter in a Bedouin camp on the eastern edge of the sand sea. Tents made of goat hair flapped in the dying wind, and the smell of boiling tea filled the air. Constance sat cross-legged on a rug, the papyrus spread before her. Fariba was beside her, tracing the faded ink with her finger.
The third marker lies here, in the great sand sea, about 3 days' journey by camel. The map marks it as the dwelling of the Silent Star.
Baylor brought them cups of mint tea, her dark eyes studying the map.
The Silent Star is a place the Old One spoke of with fear. It is a crater, perfectly round, as if a star fell from the sky and buried itself. The dunes around it never settle. Sand shifts constantly.
Constance sipped the tea, feeling its warmth spread through her.
That sounds like a natural phenomenon. A meteor impact, perhaps. The crater would be rich in minerals, iron, maybe even something rarer.
Baylor shook her head.
It is more than rocks, Miss Vale. The elders say the star hears your thoughts. If you approach with greed in your heart, the sand will swallow you,
If you approach with truth, it reveals a path.
Fariba set down her tea.
We came this far on truth. I don't intend to change now.
Constance nodded, folding the papyrus carefully.
We'll need camels, water for a week, and a guide who knows the sand sea. Can you help us, Bela?
The old woman smiled.
I will provide the camels, and I will send my grandson, Rashad, to guide you. He knows the dunes better than any man alive.
Constance stood, looking toward the horizon, where the sand sea stretched, endless and golden.
Then tomorrow, at dawn, we ride.
3 days of travel, under a sun that seemed to hang motionless. The dunes rose and fell like frozen waves, and the only constant was the creak of saddles and the soft grumble of the camels. Rasha rode ahead, a slender figure wrapped in a wind-worn cloak.
He rarely spoke, but his eyes were always moving, reading the dunes like a sailor reads the sea.
We are close. Another hour, maybe less. The crater lies beyond that ridge.
He pointed to a line of dunes that rose sharply against the pale sky. Fariba shielded her eyes.
I can see something. A dark circle, like a shadow on the sand.
They crested the ridge, and the crater opened before them. It was immense, easily 100 yards across, a near-perfect circle of darker sand, as if the earth had been scooped out by a giant hand. Constance dismounted, her boots sinking into the soft sand.
This is it, the Silent Star.
Rasha held up a hand.
Wait, the crater is not empty. Look at the center.
Constance squinted. At the heart of the crater, a low stone structure rose from the sand. A mastaba, a flat-roofed tomb, half buried.
The tomb of the serpent priest.
She began to descend the slope, the sand sliding beneath her feet. Fariba followed, then Rasha. As they reached the bottom, the wind died, and an unnatural stillness settled over the crater.
Constance approached the mastaba. Its entrance was blocked by a stone slab etched with the same serpent and sun cartouche.
The serpent and the scarab are keys. They fit somewhere on this door.
She held the golden serpent up to the carving. There was a recess in the shape of a coiled snake. She fitted the serpent into the recess. Then she pressed the lapis scarab into a small indentation beside it. The slab trembled.
With a low groan, it began to slide sideways, revealing a dark passage leading into the earth.
It's opening.
Constance took a breath, then stepped forward.
Let's find out what Senmut left behind.
The passage descended in a gentle spiral. Torches set in brackets flared to life as they passed, as if sensing their presence. The walls were covered in murals, a man in a serpent crown teaching people about stars, plants, healing hands. Fariba paused at one mural.
These are medical procedures, surgery. He's showing how to set a broken bone, how to treat a wound without infection. This knowledge was lost for millennia.
Constance studied the painting. The figures were precise, anatomical.
He was a physician, yes. But look at the next panel.
The mural shifted to show the same man standing beneath a sky filled with stars. Lines connected the stars to points on a human body.
He believed the stars influenced health. Astrology and medicine were one science to him.
At the bottom of the spiral, they entered a circular chamber. The ceiling was a dome painted deep blue, covered in stars. In the center, on a low stone bed, lay a skeleton wrapped in linen. Across its chest rested a bronze staff with a serpent's head.
Beside the body, a stone chest sat open. Inside lay rolls of papyrus, clay jars sealed with wax, and a single object that caught the torchlight, a disc of polished obsidian set in a gold ring. Constance picked up the disc carefully. It was heavy, cool, and perfectly smooth.
This is the third artifact, the Eye of the Serpent.
Fariba knelt beside the chest, unrolling one of the papyri.
These are his medical texts, complete. And there is a star chart. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. It maps the night sky, not as the Egyptians knew it, but as someone who had seen the world from above would know it.
Constance looked at the staff, at the body of Senmut, at the disc in her hand.
He was more than a priest. He was a scientist, and he buried his knowledge because the pharaohs weren't ready for it.
She turned to Fariba, her voice determined.
We're not going to leave this here. We'll document everything. Photograph the murals, carefully remove the papyri. This knowledge belongs to the world.
Fariba nodded slowly.
Professor Hardwick at the Cairo Museum will have a heart attack when he sees this.
But as Constance slipped the obsidian disc into her satchel, a grinding sound came from above. Dust trickled from the ceiling.
The entrance! It's closing!
Constance ran for the passage, Fariba close behind. The torches were sputtering and the stone slab was sliding back into place, sealing them in.
Faster!
They scrambled up the spiral, the entrance shrinking with every step.
Constance threw herself through the narrowing gap, rolling onto the sand. Fariba came after, her robe snagging on the stone.
Rusha grabbed Fariba's arm, pulling her clear just as the slab slammed shut with a thunderous boom. The crater was silent again. The wind had returned, soft and steady. Constance lay on her back.
That was close.
Fariba sat up, brushing sand from her hair.
Too close. The tomb sensed the artifact was removed. It was designed to seal permanently.
Rasha knelt beside them, his face somber.
The Silent Star has spoken. You have taken its gift. It will not open again.
Constance sat up, looking at the disc in her hands. It reflected the sky, the sun, her own tired face.
We have what we came for. The serpent, the scarab, and the eye. Three artifacts from the tomb of Senmut. But the real treasure is what we left behind. The knowledge on those walls.
She stood, offering a hand to Fariba.
We'll send a team back. Proper archaeologists, with the backing of the ministry. The tomb will be reopened, and Senmut's work will finally see the light.
Fariba took her hand and stood.
And what about Abbott?
Constance smiled, a dry, tired smile.
He's 3 days behind us, if he survived the storm. By the time he gets here, we'll be in Cairo, and his permit will have been revoked. That's what the right paperwork can do.
Rasha led the camels to him. They mounted and turned toward the distant green line of the oasis.
Let's go home.
2 weeks later, Constance stood on the balcony of a hotel overlooking the Nile. The evening breeze carried the scent of jasmine and dust. In her hand, she held a telegram from the Ministry of Antiquities. Fariba stepped out, a glass of tea in her hand.
good news?
The Ministry has approved the expedition. We're to return to Siwa next month with a full team. Professor Hardwick is already drawing up a proposal for a comprehensive study of the tomb.
Fariba smiled, sitting in the chair beside her.
And Abbott?
Arrested at the railhead in Kaga. He was trying to bribe a local official for a new permit. His collector in America has disavowed any connection. He'll be deported within the week.
The door behind them opened, and Oliver entered, carrying a leather-bound folder.
Miss Vale, I've compiled the preliminary catalogue of the papyri. There are 17 medical treatises, 4 astronomical charts, and a philosophical text that discusses the nature of the soul. It's remarkable.
Constance took the folder, flipping through the pages.
We'll need to publish this in stages. Start with the medical texts. They'll have the most immediate impact on the field. Then the star charts. Rasha's grandmother was right. Senmut's knowledge was meant to be shared.
Fariba nodded.
And your grandfather? Did you find what you were looking for?
Constance was silent for a moment. She set down the folder and reached into her pocket, pulling out a faded photograph. It showed a young man in a linen suit standing beside a dig site.
Grandfather Joseph always said there was a secret in the desert. He spent his whole life chasing it. I think he knew about Senmut, but he never found the tomb.
She looked out at the Nile, gleaming gold in the setting sun.
I found it for him, and I'll make sure his name is in the dedication.
Oliver cleared his throat. There is one more thing. The obsidian disc. We've had it examined. There's an inscription on the rim, written in a script we haven't seen before. It might be a cipher or a language entirely unknown.
Constance turned, interest lighting her eyes.
A cipher? Can you read it?
Not yet, but Dr. Fariba believes it might be the key to understanding Senmut's greatest discovery, something he encoded so that only those who possessed all 3 artifacts could decipher it.
Constance walked back inside, the obsidian disc lying on the table, reflecting the lamplight.
Then we have our work cut out for us. But this time, we do it properly. With light, with transparency, and with the world watching.
She picked up the disc, its surface smooth and cool.
The Serpent Priest's secrets have waited 3,000 years. They can wait a little longer, but they will not remain hidden forever.
Epilogue. 6 months later, Constance returned to Siwa alone. The excavation was underway, the tomb of Senmut carefully reopened by a team of specialists. But this visit was personal. She found Bela at the same campfire, a pot of tea steaming beside her. The old woman smiled as Constance sat down.
You have brought the disc?
It was not a question. Constance placed the obsidian disc on the rug between them.
We deciphered the inscription. It wasn't a language. It was a set of coordinates, a location, somewhere deep in the western desert, beyond the Great Sand Sea.
Bela studied the disc, her fingers tracing its smooth surface.
And you wish to know if you should go?
I need to know what's there. Senmut encoded a message for those who would follow him. The serpent, the scarab, the eye. They were not just keys to his tomb. They were chapters in a larger story.
Bela looked up, her dark eyes reflecting the firelight.
Some stories are meant to be finished. Others are meant to be passed on. You have passed on Senmut's knowledge to the world. That is enough for now.
Constance was silent, watching the flames.
The coordinates will wait. They have waited for millennia. When the time is right, you will know. The desert does not forget, Miss Vale, and neither does the Serpent Priest.
Constance picked up the disc and tucked it into her pocket.
Perhaps you're right, but I'm not ready to close the book yet.
She stood, looking out at the stars, blazing above the dunes.
There's always another horizon, another mystery, another story.
She turned back to Baylor, a smile on her face.
And I think that's exactly how my grandfather would have wanted it.